For the last couple, how many people actually have something to present for us? I know there's a few groups. I don't know if there are eight groups. We have one. What I'd like everybody who has a presentation for the Birds of a Feather, if they'd come up here in the front chairs, take about 2 or 3 minutes and explain your problem and your possible solutions or what you'd like to see people do for the solution, and 3 to 5 minutes each. If we had eight of us, we'd take about 1 minute each, but I think it might work with five each. But just in any order you'd like to go. Scott?
Greetings, everyone. We were with the storage access retrieval of primary sources. We actually were a couple tables, but sort of joined forces there near the end. We identified three major problems with storage access and retrieval of primary sources. One was we combined as migration and longevity. From some of the talks that we heard after lunch, we figured, let's keep it spinning. Let's just keep the data spinning. That's the best thing to do. Keep it off those CDs. We don't want that to happen. But keeping these things spinning would require this technology to be kept current and updated. So the spinning technology would need to be kept up to date. There is still something that's not quite there yet. We would need some sort of large trusted entity that would host this for us. I don't know if it's Google, the church, we're not sure. But that would definitely help in the solution of migration and longevity of data. We see this as a twofold, not only for stuff that's sort of out there in the public, but for private collections, people who have things that you just have in their attic or in their side room. Getting those online and digitized, that would come in handy for them as well. Now, the other problem that we identified was in just identifying what repositories are out there currently, and somehow adding links or discovering them, cataloging them. So we believe there is a need for some sort of global registry. Now, Google thinks they have a solution right now, and that's just go out and search everything. We would like something a little more organized than that, that would actually allow for some perhaps predefined meta-tagged data. Of course, we're in the field of genealogy, so we'd like GEDCOM and perhaps tagged data for images, text, and other genealogy-related items that could be easily identified through a global registry. This registry could start out quite simple. You have something from your great-grandmother. You'd simply put your name in the registry, and somebody may discover you and just send you an email, and you decide whether or not you want to share it with them. it may be her journal that you really don't want sent to a certain side of the family, or you don't want it very public. So there are some concerns about, for private collections, being able to register, but then also being able to remain in control of that repository. So that was our lunchtime conversation. Any comments? Should we ask for comments? Or okay. Anything anybody wants to add? Okay, we'll go with that.
I'll just add one. One of the things about open source is they often say that one of the reasons for the quality of open source is 1,000 eyes. You have 1,000 people looking at it. There are problems with what I'm about to say, but it's another point of view, is one way to preserve information for long periods of time is to have thousands of copies. And if I had a copy, and there were 999 other people that had a copy of the same thing I had, there can be some that fail, but there's very low likelihood that 1,000 copies would all fail at the same time. Okay, do we have another report?
Our group was the artificial intelligence group. I guess they decided to make me artificial intelligence for a few moments here. We discussed the issue and problem of individualizing the interface, because it's very difficult for people of diverse cultures to take, for example, New Family Search, to come into New Family Search and feel comfortable if their culture is shall we say, less technologically oriented than we are here on the Wasatch Front, and have them feel comfortable about either entering their data or retrieving data or even using the system. And secondly, as a second part of that, it's difficult for them to understand what they see if it's not culturally adapted. In other words, a system is not necessarily, or should not necessarily be designed to be all things to all people, although it might, for financial reasons, the church might tend to want New Family Search to be kind of plain vanilla so that everybody would relate to it, but there are some problems that way, and I'll come to that. It was likened to two people standing on two sides of a door, an open door. The one person on the one side is the user, and the other person on the other side is the target person, in other words, the ancestor that we are looking for. And the user feels comfortable in his or her own life space. So it's very important that that user have an interface that relates to him or her as a user. But on the other hand, the user wants to step through the door and see what the target person's life space was like. What was it like in Sweden in 1620? Or what was it like in Germany or England in the 1750s where my ancestor was? What does that town look like today? What did it look like then? And so forth. So it was mentioned, and now I'm coming to the suggested solutions. We need to make this the interface be culturally aware. So it doesn't necessarily mean all things to all people. So I guess in some ways we're talking about having access to mashups, access to different skins on software, different skins and faces on New Family Search or other products. And then the concept was mentioned of taking it from the simple to the profound. Simply profound is a difficult path to walk. In other words, to take a new user from where that person is and gradually entice them, as it was said, to entice them into the research process. So four things in conclusion, suggestions that our committee thought of how to do this. One is the concept of a knowledge base, similar to research guidance on Family Search currently. A knowledge base, though, that's broader, including local culture, access of this user to that user's local culture so that the computer comes out and says, well, I know you live in Samoa, and you like these kinds of things, and so I'm going to present myself, this program, to you in a certain way that you feel comfortable about inputting your information, and then you can continue to use it. A second suggestion was spyware type of software. That's a negative term, of course. We think of it that way. But what if we had an artificial intelligence type of program that would help a person help track a person's access to their favorite websites so that the computer would remember where you like to go. So you don't have to say, okay, I'm going to add you to my favorites. Your personal genealogical spyware automatically tracks that. And not only that, it tracks where you are in your research. It does a triage, an AI triage, we might call it, knowing where you are in your research, what your next problems are, and where you left off the night before or the month before. And then the fourth thing was to have AI interfaces that would learn about me and my preferences on the computer. Now, it was mentioned that Microsoft is working on this heavily, but I think we need to be thinking about this in genealogical terms also.
We would dearly love to hear from anybody else who has some words of wisdom for us. Any other groups here to respond? Oh, wonderful. Come on up. I'm just blind in my left eye. My wife says it's in the other eye, too.
Fortunately, we do have two eyes. I'm very hesitant to stand before this group because I'm really not a member of a group which writes programs or which develops technology. So I'm a user and an abuser of both of those things. But I am a professional genealogist, and I thought it would be interesting to come and listen to you talk and to discuss the various aspects of the work that you do. And it has been very interesting to me to be a part of this, so thank you for allowing me to share. I chose to sit with a group which was named Ancestor Registry, Bringing the World to the Genealogist. I was alone at my table until finally one other showed up. And then a third person sat down because there was no room in the inn and our table was the only one with chairs. Now, I have not discussed these issues with the other two who were at the table to any degree. I've pretty much just thought this out myself. So if I'm offensive to anyone, please just simply consider the source. Now, as a researcher, I look at online resources that we have, which have developed tremendously over the last few years, and the programs, the software that is available to aid us in our research, speaking as a representative of researchers. And all of this information and all of this material, these resources are fine, except that most of what is available online is secondary indexes, extractions, transcriptions, and other similar matter, which are good as pointers, but they're only as good as the indexer, the extractor, or the transcriber has been. And it's always incumbent upon the researcher, as you probably know, to return to the original source and find out what it really says so that you can then use that information. Likewise, with artificial intelligence or even real intelligence, research assistance, and other computer support where suggestions can be made as to pathways to follow in your research, there is no replacement, I feel, for the analytical power in the creative mind. And as much as we try to forestall and think ahead in research in general terms, there is no one who is as interested in our own research problems as we are. And so no indexer or abstractor or transcriber or research assistant programmer can give us a prevision of what we will need. We must use our own creative minds in what we do. Therefore, the greatest benefit to me as a researcher from the computer world and the internet is having images of original documents online available free, because I cannot travel the world. I just don't have time. And to have those images available to me is a boon beyond imagination. I can't imagine what the genealogical process can produce with the images online that you could simply go to. That, coupled with imaginative indexing of names linked with places and times which would gain access to those images for the researcher, is the most powerful research tool that would be available around the world to anyone, anywhere, at any time. So to me, that would bring the world of genealogy to me better than anything else that could be done in the world of computing. And so I guess that's about the core of what I would say. There will always be a demand for research assistant programming. There will be a demand for secondary sources and for powerful indexes, even without the images. So that's not any great loss, and you will certainly have all of those things to work for. But to me, the core are the original documents. Thank you.
Greatly appreciate that. Anybody else?
I figure since the room's so full, I better fulfill my assignment. I happen to sit at the search table, which is something that I have just a huge amount of experience with, being a pixel head, actually, no. During the course of the lunchtime conversation, we talked about the notion of search, and quite frankly, I think what Brother Nixon said this morning is very appropriate for search. What needs to happen with the goal of search is give me what I need, maybe not what I ask for. And so being able to create sophisticated search mechanisms to be able to provide what is pertinent to the researcher or the patron becomes tantamount to being able to allow them to be successful in moving forward with their family history. Some of the needs that would need to be in place for that to occur obviously would be accessibility to the sources. You can't search on nothing and be very successful. And so being able to have access to repositories of images and data is first essential key to being able to provide a successful search. Then the next thing that was identified is perhaps identifying really or trying to characterize what it really is that the person is trying to search on. And in our conversation, Mike Mansfield, who I don't believe is present from my family, reported from his experience that rarely does a search occur for just some random item. In the context of family history, rarely are you just trying to just search for some random individual. Generally, it tends to be an individual that's connected to your family tree. And so so the search function then could be enhanced by taking into the notion of context of what it is that you're actually searching on. So you're searching on something that you might already have some partial information on. And without requiring the user to enter all that information in, then the program or interface could be streamlined to the point where it could utilize that contextual information that is already present to be able to increase their chances of success in finding or pointing them to the relevant information more quickly.
I don't think Google does that really well. You'd have to have something else. Do we have another group to report? Or even individual to report? Okay.
I don't know if I have anything too meaningful to say, but I have been thinking a lot about data models. And Hilton's research up there has been very interesting to me as I've watched that. If you think about representing genealogical data information, you could take it one step and let's put this in a relational database. We may have a table that describes people, and you have different attributes that you want to catalog about those people. But eventually you're going to come to some point where you have an extra piece of information, or maybe something that doesn't fit that model, and this research is full of that kind of thing. And the need that I've been seeing is to be able to take a source document, what's in my hand, and to be able to accurately capture in a structured way all of the information that's on that document. And so what's interesting to me about Hilton's research is he's storing his information in an RDF data store. I believe RDF stands for Resource Description Framework. in which you can store a set of triplets, subject, object, verb, essentially, where you can make generic assertions about things. And so what's interesting to me about that is that then you can start to, you've genericized, as it were, this data store, and so you can then make any kind of assertion you want. And so to have that then in a structured format where you can then begin to query that data in that aspect, you can pretty much, the sky's the limit as to what you can represent, what data, what assertions you want to represent about that data. So anyways, I just found that very interesting.
Anyone else? Christoph?
We talked about record linkage, and some of the things that came up are things about merging and destructive merges, how when you start merging two records, you lose one, unless you choose to keep both together. And if you do choose keep them, then some of the questions that arise are questions like, you know, how do you accommodate different opinions? I mean, one record says something, the other one says something else. When you're going to show the records, you're going to have a sort of a combined view. Which do you choose to show in what order? So we talked about credibility weights or scores that could be assigned, things like this. We talked about the importance of linking to sources to check the quality of what's being merged or linked, particularly in the case of multiple sources, of course. We talked also about cleaning the data and standardizing and normalizing things like name authority and things like this that are very relevant to this problem of record linkage. Really, we just felt that this was an important issue that hasn't quite, a lot of progress has been made, but we haven't quite solved the problem yet of linking several databases. And most of the talks we've heard today, including, you know, the web-enabled and all that kind of stuff, are just compounding the problem, right? If more and more of us are starting to put all of our stuff out there on the web for everybody else to see, then the linking problem becomes even worse, right? Because now it's not just one or two that we have to link or merge. It's like a whole zillion of us that have to be linked. Anyway, there it is.
Anyone else?
I was in the AI group, but I haven't heard anybody talk about document imaging. Was there anybody in that group? Doug, were you in there? Document imaging? Well, let me just introduce you to kind of a new problem that surfaced. David, we met. Are you here? David probably had to run back. So this is an interesting problem, and I'm glad to have our professional genealogists here to help us kind of snap back into reality. What we've done a reasonably good job of, it looks like, is getting the scanning technology to where it's now useful, where we can scan rolls of microfilm with some dispatch. We can crop them. We can we can register them. At least we know how to do that. Heath has done some great work with zoning. There's a whole thing, array of things we call the digital microfilm pipeline. And it's not just microfilm, it's document images in general. And we've got a whole battery of volunteers who are now extracting data and creating indexes from that. In fact, so much so now that the bottleneck is now appearing in a different place. We always thought the bottleneck was just trying to get the data indexed. That's starting to go away. But the problem now is that somebody has to create the batches that need to be indexed. Somebody has to put these groups of documents together, and they have to figure out what needs to be indexed, what names and what dates and what fields are those. And that requires a fairly high-level domain expertise, and not everybody can do that. And so we've got a student who's worked on a proposal for this, for a master's degree, but there's a need to reason about document images at a higher level. You know, what kind of an image is this? You know, if I were to group it or classify it, categorize it, how would I do that? And so one fellow told me at lunch today that one thing that they just need really almost immediately is the ability to just have a title board view index into a piece of microfilm that just simply allows you to quick, without having to, even though Michael Ronstrom is very quick at turning the handle on the microfilm reader, that can very quickly just look at the title boards and tell you what kinds of things, what collections are on that, so that we facilitate your ability to access and browse through primary documents. And there are some nice pattern recognition techniques that can be used to do just that, that can kind of group and cluster documents at higher levels. And I guess I would just put that out for you that that's kind of what's missing in a lot of these domains. Okay, we're really good at doing the simple things, you know, at doing quick data extraction and doing simple models. But when it requires a secondary level or a high level of reasoning, capturing the user's interests, capturing the user's knowledge and domain expertise, we need models for that too. We need to be able to deploy machine learning algorithms and so forth to those ends as well. So I'm just kind of using that as a springboard to cite an example. Document imaging is, we need better compression. We need higher level compression algorithms that would capture the high level patterns of the strokes and so forth that are not just bit packing techniques, because we believe our algorithms will get better and better at searching those primary records. And so we need to adopt compression strategies that will facilitate that kind of searching. But I would suggest that that we maybe try to think of what are the capacities of high-level human intelligence, and how can we exploit those? Okay, gone are the days when the computer cycles are more important than the human cycles. What am I going to do with a machine that has a terabyte of memory and a terahertz processor? I hope it's more than word processing. You know, are we going to have some engines running in the background that can prefetch, that it can anticipate, you know, that can open up the portal between that door on both sides and capture your profiles, your interests, and allow you to be more productive? And to do that, the only way we're going to do that is try to capture the higher level reasoning intelligence. We'll absolutely never get to the point of the individual's reasoning, but we can sure help them a lot. Anyway, thanks.
Next. I'd like to summarize things this way. We've heard the term lengthen your stride. Each of us has a talent in different areas and to different levels and to different degrees, but each of us has a talent. We are here because we are interested in furthering the work of family history. And each of us has a talent to help solve problems. You've seen the presentations today of those who have gone forth and have attempted, and in many cases successfully solved, some interesting problems that will further the work. Each of us needs to take the charge, and this is the charge I leave with you until next year, of what can I do? What can I do with my talent? Not to bury it, but to use it. Identify something, typically a problem, that you can help solve. So if you're like me, it's when I'm in the car going to work, I like to dwell on certain problems and what can I do to solve them. Or if I'm in the shower, what can be a burning passion in your life? Not a huge problem, but just some contribution you can make. And then go forth and do it. My problem is I typically have great passion for almost 3 days, and then I move on in life. But this is a passion that needs to be ignited for a long period of time. I would like to leave that charge with you, that you think about that. If there's anything that this workshop has done this day to ignite the passion within you to solve some problem that you perceive, and then perhaps next year, submit a paper or do something to tell other people about your solution. This is what these workshops are all about, is to help us move forward. We heard at the beginning this morning of a woman who lived almost 100 years ago, and her vision of the future We are now just starting to accomplish many of the things that she desired to do. We need a new vision. What can we do in the next 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 40 years to move the work forward? If you don't do it, who will? We appreciate everybody that has come today and has stayed and participated. I've asked Bennett to, if he'd come down and give us a closing prayer. Bennett's a former student of mine. I've been picking on my former students for opening and closing prayers, but we appreciate him.